Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ground Zero, hosted by Nia Bex and Reginald Clemens, celebrating loving the movement. We celebrate by recognizing the small steps and leaps and bounds of individuals and activist groups, whom have led us further away from slavery and closer to full freedom from mass incarceration through efforts for justice reform in society at large. Today, we have a very serious topic in relation to the death penalty, which is the deepest depths of the criminal justice system that needs criminal justice reform, and it definitely is something that should, in my opinion, be stopped, because the practice of the death penalty is so absolute, there's no return from mistakes when you wrongfully execute somebody. And you should never take something you cannot give back. And there's no such thing as justice without mercy. And I don't see any mercy in the vengeance of the death penalty, because I don't see it as a deterrent. It hasn't proven to me a deterrent. It doesn't serve the purpose of executing the most heinous crimes. It appears as though a lot of things dealing with the death penalty, surrounding death penalty, are biased and personal and based upon social classism. And when it comes to race and finance, so what I would like to do is we're going to hopefully have someone call in from the Organization for Black Struggle and OBS. And
this call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
Her name is Michelle Smith, and we'll be discussing the Kevin Johnson case, the whole schedule. He has an execution scheduled for the 22nd of this month.
I think she's on the line right now, Reggie.
Yes, please bring her in.
Hey, Michelle, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Hello, Michelle. How are you doing? I was just introducing you, and you came in right on cue.
I'm doing well. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Yes. Thank you for coming. We appreciate you taking up the time to come in on behalf of Organization for Black Struggle and represent OBS on behalf of Kevin Johnson. Because I was just explaining how there's execution date set up, and the death penalty is more political and class based than it is has anything to do with justice.
Yeah, that's definitely very true. Very true. Just wanted to clarify a couple things before we go on. So I definitely am a member of OBS, and it is an amazing organization. However, that is not the organization that houses this work. Our organization that does strictly death penalty work in our state is called Missourians to Abolish the Death Penalty, and I am the co-director of that organization. So just wanted to, there was some confusion, but just wanted to make sure that's understood.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. And Kevin's execution date is November 29th. So it's the last Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
Let's clarify that.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. No problem at all. But, I definitely appreciate, being on with you today. And the death penalty is definitely a institution that we need to get away from in our state and in our country. We should be beyond the barbaric practice of killing people in a civilized society. So I appreciate being on and being able to speak about it.
Yes. Dealing with the Kevin Johnson case specifically and in particular, he has one of those cases where a police officer lost his life in the line of duty. And there was a lot of there was a lot of people that felt like he should get the death penalty as far as in the political arena. And there was a lot of questions about it out in society at large that weren't, in my opinion, fully addressed. What my understanding of his case is it was more of a...
You have 1 minute left.
...passion where his brother, the police, the officer had sat there and let his brother die, having an asthma attack. And Kevin Johnson, in a fit of rage, allegedly said to have went and got a gun and came back and killed the police officer, shot the police officer, fatally. And that's the reason he ended up getting the death penalty. And the first was a hung jury. And the court removed the lawyer that was representing him in the first trial against his protest, Kevin Johnson's protest. I find it strategically unfair and extremely biased on the political end of that case. Anything you'd like to add to that?
Thank you for using Shakira. Goodbye.
So we lost Reggie, but I want to give you the time to just clarify the things that he was saying and also just give us, you know, background story of what's going on for everybody listening.
Sure. So Kevin did kill a police officer on July the 5th of 2005, something that he has, you know, regretted, and it was a tragedy all around. His little brother that Reggie spoke of had a medical emergency. It wasn't a heart attack. I'm sorry, it wasn't an asthma attack. His little brother had a heart condition, and he had this heart condition because their mom was doing drugs at the time. She was addicted to substances, and he was born with a heart defect. So the little brother had been ill, you know, sick little boy his entire life. And that particular day, he collapsed and had a seizure due to his, you know, heart condition. And the police, you know, were on scene. Now, they, of course, said that they tried to help as much as they could. And honestly, I can't say that they didn't necessarily try to help. But what I can say is, in that moment, Kevin and his family did not think they were trying to help. They felt like the police were being, you know, apathetic. They felt like they were not showing this 12-year-old child the amount of emergency support and care that they should have, that they would have shown another child in another situation. And so this frustrated and angered Kevin. And several hours later, his little brother did pass away. By the time they did get him to the hospital many minutes later, he did pass away. And so several hours later, Kevin did see the policeman. The policeman happened to be in the community, in a neighborhood, patrolling. I don't know exactly what he was doing, but he was there. And Kevin saw him, and, you know, it was just an encounter where Kevin felt like this person was responsible for what happened to his brother. And it wasn't just in that moment, you know, that Kevin's anger and his grief overtook him, but also the fact that he had suffered great abuse and trauma in his own life. Being 19 years old, and he was, you know, still young, just out of, you know, at his end of his teenage years, Kevin had been abused, neglected, and traumatized his entire childhood. Foster cares, group homes, you know, being abused in every home that he was in as a child, he received nothing but abuse. And so all of those factors joined to you know, make him not be able to make the right decisions. And in his grief and trauma in that moment, especially right after seeing his brother die, he lashed out inappropriately, and he expresses that, but he lashed out inappropriately and shot and killed Officer McEntee. And so what was going on with Kevin was never really taken into consideration in court. The prosecutor basically tried to portray Kevin as a young black kid, a thug, a animal, you know, some degenerate, which was not true. Kevin was a star football player. He was very liked in his community and at school. His main issue at school was his attendance. Because of his abuse and his unstable home life, he often missed school. but he was not some child, a young person, a teenager running the street terrorizing everybody. That was not Kevin at all. He, like I said, he was a teenage dad, so he had a baby at that time and was trying to work odd jobs, trying to go to football games, and really trying to get himself together. But he had no support and no help his entire life, so those things were difficult to accomplish. And that particular day when he saw one person that he cared for so much, who was his little brother, when he saw him die, you know, something just triggered him, and he lashed out inappropriately. So we've never said Kevin is not guilty, or we never said right. that, you know, he deserved some consequences, but we don't believe he deserved the death penalty, because that's something that, first, other people who kill cops are not on death row, because people say, oh, if you kill a cop, you get to die. I can name five people right now who are in prison, right, for killing cops, but they're not on death row. So death penalty is arbitrary. Some people get it, some people don't. And that's one of our problems with it. It's like, who decides who gets it and who doesn't? Because people do commit certain crimes, and there are situations, you know, that happen in their life and other things that led to that. But some people, you know, do get death penalty, some don't. It's political and it's arbitrary, so we shouldn't use it at all if it's not something that is justly applied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that is that's definitely our position on it.
So can you give us a time stamp on around when this happened, from when it happened and when he went to court, so that we can get kind of context at, like, also for, like, what the justice system was like then, and has there been any improvements or any progress made on your organization's behalf to getting something like this that obviously could be preventable but wasn't?
Well, so this happened in 2005. It was the day after the 4th of July in 2005, and
okay.
Kevin was, you know, arrested at that time. He went to trial in 2006. And that first trial, actually, it was a better outcome. When I say better, I mean that the jury did not come to an agreement to give Kevin a death sentence. They were actually split. Several of the
right.
jurors wanted second-degree murder because they understood that this person was in grief. He was traumatized, and in that moment, you know, he was lashing out. And so there was a split verdict, that first trial, which means a mistrial. So there was a mistrial the first time, and that second trial, the prosecutor at the time, he did everything in his power to make sure that the second trial ended up in a death sentence. And
oh, wow.
One of the first things he did, yeah, exactly. So this is also Bob McCullough, right? We all know, you know, his history with the Brown family and things, you know, that happened there.
The same Bob McCullough.
Correct.
What's Bob McCullough's position?
At that time, he was the elected prosecuting attorney of St. Louis County.
Okay.
He, of
okay.
course, he is not anymore, thankfully, but at
right.
that time, that's what he was, yes. And that second trial, he pulled out all the stops. The first thing he did was get an all-white jury, because we know, as black people especially, when you have an all-white jury against a young black person, especially a black male, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to get a harsher sentence than you would otherwise, because the first jury was mixed. There were a mixture of black and white people, but that second jury, McCullough decided, oh, I need all white people because this is how I'm going to get a death sentence. So he made sure to get all white people on the jury. And he tried to keep out all of Kevin's history, the history of his abuse. And when I say his abuse, Kevin was literally abused from the time he was a baby to the day he died. Social services took him from his mom, you know, because, again, she had a substance abuse disorder. And so he and his siblings were taken from their mom where he was abused, and put in foster care. And we all know in foster care there's abuse as well. These places are not, you know, great. They're not better than the place that they came from. So Kevin was put in foster care, but he was still abused. So his entire life, all he knew was violence, abuse, and trauma. And when
right.
That day happened, you know, and he his little brother, you know, died, he just couldn't, you know, mentally, he couldn't, you know, make the best decisions. He was traumatized. His little brother was like his, almost his child as well. He was very close to his little brother because, you know, their mother again was, you know, was not really able to take care of them. So he was the one person who was trying to care for his little brother. So, you know, he just lived a very difficult life, and in that moment he lashed out. And so the prosecution, that second trial, made sure to keep all of that information out of the trial. He did not want the jury to hear about, you know, his trauma, his abuse, his little brother's passing. He just wanted the jury to think that Kevin walked outside one day and decided to kill a policeman, which was not true at all. And so that second trial, he did get a death sentence. The jury came back, you know, unanimously with a death sentence.
Oh, wow. What caused the mistrial? Did he just call for it and the judge granted it?
No. Well, the first trial, when it's not a unanimous jury, you know, when all of them didn't, some of the jurors wanted second-degree murder as the verdict, and some wanted first-degree murder. So since they never could agree, that's when the judge declares a mistrial, because the jury just could not agree to a sentence.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
right.
and that, of course, because they saw the actual evidence about Kevin's life, and also there were some people on the jury who were black who may have sympathized with Kevin's plight, who may have known, you know,
right,
people who had been in foster care or maybe in foster care themselves, you know. So there were people on the first jury who could sympathize and empathize with him, but on that second jury, there were not. And so after his,
so
you know, his conviction. I'm sorry, go ahead. What'd you say?
Yes, ma'am. So it's really hard for us to even get a fair shake in period, because the if they can't come to a consensus or an agreement for a punishment, that's very easy to allow lots of opportunity for. So what I'm saying, like, the prosecutor who has an alternative agenda to get their own, you know, to get their way. And how has it been for Kevin going through these pandemics?
Well, it's been very difficult for Kevin, you know, and you are definitely right. We can never get any justice, you know, in the system, because we're supposed to have a jury of our peers, and that
right,
rarely happens. But, yeah, it's definitely been difficult. So even after Kevin was incarcerated, Kevin had a daughter who was 2 years old at the time. She was a child herself. And she was 2 years later, after he was arrested, she was 4 years old, and she witnessed her own mom be killed. And so she was standing there when someone tried to kill her mom. And so, you know, this family, this community just has been exposed to so much violence. And so after that happened with his daughter, Kevin, you know, just decided, while, you know, of course, while in prison, to be the best dad that he could. You know, he connected with people who would bring her to visit. He connected with people that would, you know, make sure that she was doing her homework and make sure she was cared for. You know, he made sure that his daughter had the care and concern that he never did, that no one gave to him. You know, even from prison, he did everything he could to make sure that she had a better life. And especially after her mom died, that was his mission. So Kevin became a great father to his daughter, even from prison. You know, his daughter often
right,
says, you know, a lot of my friends, my dad is a better dad to me from prison than my friends' dads are, and they are out here, you know, in the community. And she's got a great relationship with her father. And they just have, you know, very, very close relationship. And, you know, he adores his daughter. And now he has a grandson. Kevin is actually a granddad now. So he has become a better person. He's, you know, worked on himself. First of all, he worked on his mental health. He's taken the classes and done things that he didn't get out here. So he's worked on his mental health, and he's become a mentor in prison. He's someone who helps the other young men, you know, study for their GED testing and things of that nature. So he's definitely been a great support and help to young men incarcerated. And then to his daughter, he has been a, you know, present, active father, even, again, from prison. And that's something that he dedicated himself to do. So he matters. You know, he is important, and he has so much that he can give to people, even from the place that he is incarcerated.
Definitely, definitely. Are there any? Let me look at the time. We got 10 minutes. So are there any? Are there any things that you guys do on a regular to try to push for an agenda to get him clemency, correct? That was called, that people should know about. Do you guys call at a certain time every day, or leave emails? What is the call to action?
We actually do, and thank you for asking about that part. So we have an entire campaign built around Kevin, and it's called Clemency for KJ. KJ is basically his nickname, and that information is on our website, and I definitely can give the audience that information. It's MADPMO.org, and that is our website. So if you go to the
MADP.
M-O. M-A-D-P-M-O. D like in death, P like in penalty. M-A-D-P-M-O.
M-O. Dot org?
And if you, yes, dot org, correct. And if you go to our website, there is a lot of the information, the toolkit, which people can share from graphics and pictures and those sorts of things. We also have a video, and it is a very powerful 35-minute video that Kevin's attorneys had prepared, and is talking to him and his family, but also talking to teachers and coaches who, you know, knew Kevin as a child. And interestingly enough, they even say that, you know, we failed this young man. And the schools understand now, this teachers understand that they should have stepped in, they should have done more. But, you know, right. Back in the, you know, late 80s and early 90s, they just didn't see that as their place. So his teachers talk about, you know, how he came to school, you know, with they could tell he had been abused. And they just didn't do anything about it. But his teachers are interviewed. His mom and his brother and his daughter as well are interviewed. So it's an amazing 35-minute documentary, and it is on the website as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask people to go watch it and learn. You know, to advocate someone, you have to know what you're talking about, and you have to really get an emotional connection to what they've been through. So once people go to our website and learn some of the information, we do ask people to write, call, and email our governor. And people do that. We have some people do it every single day, and to ask for clemency. And also the main point is to ask to not kill in your name. And I tell people, if you pay taxes in the state, they murder people in your name because our tax money goes to executions. That's what pays for these things. So, you know, we ask people to reach out and ask the government, the governor, not to kill in their name. And we are also have a clemency petition. It's on change.org. So if you search clemency for KJ on change.org, you will find the petition. And on November the 15th, we're actually going to the state capitol from 1 to 3 o'clock that afternoon, and we're going to deliver the petition, and we're going to have a rally inside of the state capitol where, you know, prominent people will speak and organizers as well as advocates will speak. And we hope to, you know, garner the attention of the media. So that's Tuesday, November the 15th from 1 to 3. And that information will also be on our website. So everything that we're doing will be on our website, and people can, you know, look and also sign up for our emails. We have an email sign up on our website, too, so if you want to keep updated on what we're doing, you can sign up and get our emails.
November
15th. Yeah, November 15th, so next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but next Tuesday. So executions in Missouri are held on Tuesdays. Tuesdays at 6 o'clock are when executions are held. So we normally go to the state capitol on a Tuesday because it's symbolic. And we, you know, and right now the clemency petition has little over 10,000 signatures, but we greatly appreciate more signatures. I know sometimes with petitions on change.org, people don't do anything with them. They just, like, collect the signatures online and they don't do anything. But we do. We actually print our petitions. We print them out. and we actually carry the paper to Jeff City. We take it up to the governor's office, and we leave the petitions with the governor's office. So between the petition, the phone calls, the emails that the governor receives, they understand that people in our state do not want Kevin and anyone else executed.
So there is any way, this is such a vicious cycle. We've been having now we have Tim Gardner as the prosecuting attorney. Is anything she do, or is there any higher, the political that happened with AJ that is affecting them, and what can officials do, like, stream to on the process if there who holds the power?
Well, I'll say that I know you said something about Kim Collins, right? I'm sorry, Kimberly Gardner, the prosecuting attorney in St. Louis County. So, well, Kevin's case in particular is not in St. Louis City, because Kimberly Gardner is the prosecutor in St. Louis City. It's in St. Louis County with Wesley Bell.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So Wesley Bell, he has a conviction, and he calls it a conviction incident review unit, but he has not taken up an investigation because Kevin's, interestingly enough, Kevin's defense attorney years ago is currently today a prosecutor in the St. Louis County Prosecution Office. So there is a little conflict, you know, between that was his defense attorney, now he's in that office, so we have to make sure we keep things separate. Wesley Bell is not directly involved in the legal process. However, we would love for him, you know, just to come out and make a statement about the fact that, you know, Kevin was a young person who dealt with so much in his life and that he deserves mercy. He hasn't done that as of yet, and we will be asking him to do that. We're actually having a rally in St. Louis County in front of the court building on November 21st. And it won't be any sort of, like, you know, against Prosecutor Bell. Is really a plea to get them to understand his humanity and the fact that Kevin deserves mercy, and just from a human standpoint, not necessarily a legal aspect, but just from a human standpoint, we would love, you know, for the prosecutor to just to come out and make a statement about the fact that, you know, the situation that happened with Kevin. So we'll be out on the 21st, so we have the 15th in Jeff City, and then we have the 21st in St. Louis County. And all that information will be on our website, again, madpmo.org. And on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, that is our page as well, MADPMO. So if you put that into all of those social media sites, you'll get to our social media page.
All right. On down to the last minute of the call. This has been very informative. Glad that AJ was able to get better, fight like that, just breaking this cycle. This is a vicious cycle, and him being able to still stay connected to his daughter through the traumas that she's been through, been able to cultivate a relationship even behind those walls. You know, that's something that affects many of our young Black youth today. But he didn't
get
an excuse. And that is beautiful. And it's very unfortunate that the system to help get children away from broken is also a broken system itself.
Yeah, we definitely agree.
This can inspire a lot of change, and we save KJ's life, even if he has to continue out his sentence. But we can. Is there any last
thing
that you want to say?
No, that's it. Thank you so much. And, of course, I appreciate Reggie for reaching out and allowing me to come on today. So thank you. Thank you all very much. And, I'm here. If, we want to connect again, I definitely am here. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. That was Ground Zero, Reggie, and Anaya Betts, and we are out. Michelle, I will be calling you to connect more, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.